believe there's a very high impedance at the end, running from 1,500 maybe to 2,000 ohms. You need more like a 1 to 9 Balun over.
Yeah, it's not a half wave. It's somewhere in between. I took some measurements that are online. I think it's 107 feet, which isn't a half wave on anything 80 and up. And I have I'm currently feeding it with a 1 to 9 unon.
Okay, the 1 to 9 is good. That's a good move. I guess that it's not a half wave. You're really going to need a good ground over.
KD2RMD again. It's not going to make a difference how you orient the wire. If you can get straight, leaving the 9-to-1 Balun, all the more better. But if you slope it, turn, even put a complete 90-degree bend in, then it's relatively okay. You're just going to change the radiation pattern. If you would like that sweet dipole-type radiation pattern that we all come to love over the years, you try and make it completely straight. But slope it, bend it to make it work, then don't be afraid to. But if you can run it straight, then obviously running it completely straight is the way to go. And if the 9-to-1 transformer Balun is right at the window, like I'm going to assume that your table in your shack is right next to a window, maybe try and MacGyver yourself something like a plank or a something to stick out the window, just to put that 9-to-1 Balun as far away from the house as you can. I mean, ideally you would try to have it 3 to 4 feet away from the window at a minimum, but some people have had that transformer Balun, like right there on the table. But you try and get it away as much as you can, and then and just manipulate the counterpoise and move the counterpoise around. Set it up one way, do a test. Set it up a different way, do a test, and then you decide for yourself. But ground manipulate those wires. It would only change the radiation pattern, and at that, I don't even think it would be that much of a difference. This is Katie Russell in Quorum.
All right, great. Thank you guys for the tips. It was very helpful. I'm going to try a couple of things out. I'm going to mess around with the ground, see what works best for me. And it's good to know that the only thing I'll really be messing around with as far as the random wire placement is going to be the pattern. So it's good to know that I can keep it straight, and that will be good. All right, thanks for your help, guys.
Well, you're welcome to ask them. Please, if you have any other questions, where to find us all, and I wish you good luck. And when you hang it up there, come back and tell us how it all worked. I would, though, add that probably putting the counterpoise inside a house would not be the best move, because that leaves you with a much greater chance of RF causing problems to your electrical equipment. Try and keep your counterpoise outside with the rest of that setup. Wish you luck, Tasso.
Thank you. 73, guys. This is K2TAS. I'll be on the side.
Question.
Yes, what's your question?
Could you just explain what an un-un is? Thank you.
Ununs are transformers. Baluns and ununs are transformers. There are Balun circuits. A center-fed dipole is a balanced device. A open wire, open line is a balanced device. A off-center-fed dipole or a vertical is a unbalanced device. And a coaxial cable is an unbalanced transmission device. So sometimes when you are feeding, say, a center-fed dipole that's balanced to a coaxial cable that's unbalanced, you want a balanced-to-unbalanced transformer, and that's a Balun. In addition to modifying whether it's a balanced or symmetrical or unsymmetrical type of a circuit, you also can introduce an impedance transformation. So when he mentioned that he has a 9-to-1 unun, it means that it's changing the impedance by a factor of 9. In the case of Ed mentioning a half-wave end-fed, where the impedance at the edge goes up to about 2,000 to 3,000 ohms. You use a 49-to-1 usually on to bring down the impedance to some place that a standard transmitter can handle it in one way or another. So that's what an on-on is. I hope that answers the question for you.
Perfect. Thank you very much. KE2QR.
You're welcome. Anyone else with anything related to Tasso's question?
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
When I started out, we would just call them balans, 1-to-1 balans, and then you had 4-to-1 balans, 9-to-1 balans. The name Unun seems to have come up later. You know, I got it in the mid-1980s. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, at one time people didn't bother with the difference between whether it was balanced, unbalanced, or what, and everything was a balance. And like you mentioned, because I looked it up because someone had an interesting question on another technical net that I am net control operator for, and his question was very interesting. He understood the concept of a balun. He understood the concept of an unun. He wanted to know if there was such a thing as a bal-bal.
Very good, very good. Yeah, okay. Yeah, and then it helps to use that 1-to-1 balun too. This way it separates everything. You know, it's very hard to get RF coming down the line if you got a primary and a secondary transformer. Is essentially what it is. It's not going to come back. Okay, back to you, Roy.
Yes, indeed, Paul. Sometimes a 1-to-1 balun is a legitimate transformer balun. That's what you're describing, and that it totally isolates the two circuits. Sometimes people fudge that concept, and effectively they call a couple of RF chokes lining a coaxial cable, or even a poor man's choke, which is just coiling coaxial cable 5 or 6 full turns. They'll call that a 1-to-1 balun. You know, it's kind of fudging the concepts a little bit, but all of these things are very good at isolating common mode transmissions down a transmission line that can then act as a radiator and radiate. Your transmission line should not be radiating. It should contain all of the power and get it from your transmitter to your antenna. But in common mode, it will radiate all over the place, including inside your shack, and that's why ferrite clamps are very common, and one of the first bits of advice everyone gives new ham is to get a lot of ferrite clamps and put them on any piece of wire that's getting acting flaky when you hit that push-to-talk button. Okay, on to next person with a question, David, KG2RY. What's your question for tonight, David?
Good evening, Roy. Hope you're having a great evening. With frequency modulation, there's maximum deviation for ham radio. In terms of fidelity, why is it the potential for FM to sound so bad? Mike, back to you.
Well, David, I'm not exactly sure of the question. Frequency modulation is a decent mode. It's dependent upon a number of things. As you mentioned, the frequency deviation is different. Wideband FM versus narrowband FM gives you a different bandwidth, and the wider the bandwidth, the better the audio fidelity. So a normal repeater, your radio's FM deviation is about 5 kilohertz, so it allows for a maximum of 5 kilohertz of audio frequency. It can transmit 7,000, but, you know, goes up to 5,000, which is pretty good. Narrow FM allows people to pack more transmitters and operating communications on the same frequency band by narrowing the deviations and thus narrowing the spectrum of frequencies. So you can no longer transmit beyond about 2.5 kilohertz. So the sound quality diminishes. On top of that, you have either full full noise canceling or partial. If you have a very strong signal, you're able to capture the receiver and the noise is almost negligible. As you decrease your signal, it doesn't have full quieting and you get a louder and louder background hiss on your signal. So it's a combination on the frequency deviation and whether your signal is strong enough for full quieting.
QSL, QSL. I guess, you know, I tell you, even like certain stations sound better than others. Certain repeaters sound better than others. Certain radios sound better than others. And if the deviation is 5 kilohertz, why should there be such a difference in the quality of sound from one transmission reception to another?
Well, because the specifications give you a best case scenario. If you have unlimited time and money to invest in the design and production of equipment, you can approach the maximum that the specifications will allow for. The problem is, though, that we hams are not that easy to open our wallet and pay a lot of money. So there are a lot of corners that are cut. Microphones can probably be better designed with better audio quality. Radios can have less noisy preamps to the microphone. They can have noise canceling circuitry. They could have frequency equalization that can be fine-tuned for people's voices. And so, you know, the specifications give you an optimum if you cut no corners. But every manufacturer cuts corners. Some people's voices don't work well with the microphones that they decide to use, or they're not set up in the right way, or the circuitry in the radio isn't capable of tweaking the equalization. So there's a whole bunch of weak chains that can snap. Yes, Wesley.
Yeah, a few more things. Spacing. So yes, 5 kilohertz is normally, although it's different in Europe, is 12.5 kilohertz. And the spacing between the signals, between the channels, which they don't exist, channels don't exist. There is a regulation at which channel you can transmit at a certain frequencies, and there are certain areas of the band that are not regulated. So we have 15, 20, and 30 kilohertz depend up on the region. So in USA, that depends where you are. There are certain regulations. Now, a good thing is in Europe, when we have a space 12.5 kilohertz, and we have a deviation allowed, also 12.5 kilohertz, if I remember correctly, the quality of the signal is almost radio-like. There is a operation permitted with the value of 6 kilohertz against the previous maximum permitted bandwidth only at 2.7 kilohertz. That's for the 10 meters FM radio operation. the region that you can operate is between 29.1 and 29.3 megahertz. For a simple X operation with the repeater inputs, the frequencies are between 29.5 and 29.6. Not every ham radio operator remembers that. There are certain regulations also for the repeater output. The quality of the signal has a lot to do with deviation that is allowed for the signal. 5 kilohertz is plenty too enough, or plenty too much for it. The people have a tendency to overdrive with the microphone, it's sort of like if you have a sound frequency and you just put it too loud. If you look at the scope, you just crashing the upper and the lower part of it into its shape.
Yes, Wesley, you can see that on an oscilloscope. It's called clipping. When you drive the signal to an amplitude that your circuits can no longer linearly deal with, and it just flats up and gives you sharp edges which produce harmonics and all kinds of artifacts. So you're right to a degree. Some people overdrive their microphone. They want to have a nice, strong voice signal, and sometimes they overdo it, although I've known more than a few of people who, for another set of reasons, under-amplify their microphone gain, and so they're whispering. And sometimes it's very painful to hear a conversation between one person whispering and the other one yelling. There are just so many links in the chain, in the audio chain, that can go wrong that can color or really make the difference between an enjoyable audio sound from a given transmitter versus a terrible one.
In comparison, 2.7 is the bandwidth of the SSD single sideband. But if you take the LNB or UNB, which are the two identical signals, when you cut the carrier to 3%, and then you look at the width of each one of the lobes, then that would be approximately 1.8. So 1.8 plus 1.8 is more than 2.7. But that is important for those guys who want to build the device. And I didn't meet in the United States of America a single guy who built SSD, single sideband. Now, one more thing about amplifier. The class of amplifier is very much important, the class C. We have, for FM modulation, we have a greater level of efficiency than at class A or AB amplifier. That amplifier would be good for single sideband. The frequency modulation is a mode of transmission that has, well, quite few good advantages for our use, and it offers effective transmission properties in terms of reducing noise and the signal variation. But final amplifier, if for some reason drives out of specified spec, that could be due to the capacitors, especially electrolyte capacitors in the power supply, that will cause a high efficiency level of FM transmission to be downgraded into a ship.
Okay, thank you very much, Wesley. Yes, FM amplifiers need not be as persnickety linear as single sideband. So you could get away with more efficient, slightly less linear designs as long as you don't want your users to also use single sideband with that amplifier. I'm not quite sure if I understood the comment about the sideband. If you have a bandwidth of 2.7, which is a very usual one, but not, it's not really locked in, and especially nowadays with software-defined radios, MyFlex and there are other radios can adjust the bandwidth of a single sideband transmission. If you take 2.7 kilohertz as a sideband, it's both the upper and the lower sideband are mirror images of each other. They have the same bandwidth. It's the value of single sideband that not only do you remove the carrier, but you remove either the upper or the lower sideband and have the other component, and that takes up the 2.7 kilohertz. So it's not that 2.7 is then divided in half. Each of the two sidebands have the same bandwidth.
Well, depends what you're talking about. Receiver side or the transmitter side. The typical receiver will normally employ SSB receive band of the standard 3 kilohertz as a single sideband bandwidth. Modulating whatever signals are received within 3 kilohertz band. Now, the 2.7, in reality, the bandwidth of the SSB signals is a little more complicated. The bottom frequencies are often limited to 300 hertz for the carrier. So then we have a two lobes around. I would explain this. We have a single sideband with 3% of the carrier, and we have with 30% of the carrier. At some point, you see that the theory with the practice doesn't match. So yes, we should be at 2.7, and from the receiver side, at the typical transceiver, if you have a transceiver, you could narrow the filter even less than 2.7 if you want. But you got to understand, you're receiving only L and B or U and B.
KG2RY.
Go ahead.
90 of you answering my question. You know, you're talking about transmitters mostly. I'm very much interested in the audio on the receiver side, you know. My HF radio sounds fantastic. I listen to AM broadcasts on it. Single sideband sounds clear, you know. My monoband radio sounds amazing. Front-firing speaker. My dual band radio sounds like garbage, and, you know, if the deviation is 5 kilohertz on 2 meters, why can't it be more on UHF?
Simple answer. Your FM radio in your radio at a 93 megahertz, let's say, is 30 kilohertz wide. It's plenty for a good quality sound. Your FM bandwidth, FM deviation allowed by the FCC is only a small fraction of that what is allowed for the good quality music received. That's why it sounds this way. You pay something, in other words, the quality is only for you to be able to communicate, not to enjoy it. That's how I understand that. If you go to Europe, you have a 12.5 kilohertz. The FM is absolutely standing. Dr. Roy, maybe you can say it with better English.
Question. What model is his dual-band radio? I think it's just a bad receiver.
Could agree with you, Ed, and we will get back to that subject hopefully very, very quickly. I just want to point out that somehow FM broadcast radio was introduced into the topic, and you can't really discuss apples and oranges. The frequency deviation of FM stereo broadcasts are 75 kilohertz, so you have a lot wider audio reproduction capable. But let's go back to David's original question and ask him what the radio with the awful audio is, because it's very easy to take good radio signals and make them into very sloppy, awful audio. That's an engineer can do that in his sleep or drunk. So, David, please, what model are you talking about as far as awful audio?
QSL Roy, and thank you for asking that question. This radio is a Kenwood TMV71 Alpha.
Okay, I am personally not, have no experience with this particular model. If anyone out there has one and either likes or dislikes its audio, please step up to the bar.
WX2M.
Yes.
This is WX2M. I use the middle name Gus. I'm in East Brunswick, New Jersey. I'm using the B71A, and I think the audio is great on it.
It may just be that radio. It may have a damaged speaker.
5 kilohertz off. This is KP2MAR. That's the problem.
Yes, you wanted to say something?
He's got actually something good. He's 5 kilohertz off, and you can listen to the signal.
See if I have it. Okay, maybe he doesn't realize this, but when he's on a certain repeater, it could be 5 kilohertz up or down from the actual station he wants to listen to. That's on 2 meters. But I don't know if any other speaker wants to listen to that control.
I'm sorry, interrupting Dr. Roy. Do you see the difference? Maybe that's the explanation. Because the radio doesn't tune to that what it shows on the display. Either from the receiver side or the transmitter side. The 5 kilohertz is quite visible. And to actually.
Can I adjust that in the menu function?
It's setting the frequency, although I would assume that if you twiddle the knob, you can change the frequency and figure out that the audio gets better. If you're off frequency, there's a definite problem. But yeah, that can also introduce audio artifacts into your received signal.
My question is... is there a menu function I can bring myself back to the center?
I would assume there is a hardware reset function. Almost every piece of electric gear I own has some kind of strange bunch of commands that'll reset it to factory offset.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I think that's the Kenwood with the front panel that you could flip 180 degrees. So let's say he's got the speaker coming out of the bottom, you could flip that panel and make it where you could reverse it where the speaker is now coming out of the top just by rotating the front panel. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, does that sound like your model, David?
Yes, the speaker's on top, but I'm connected to an external speaker.
Okay, so it's not a matter of the speaker system. It's either something in the audio amplification chain of the radio. I guess theoretically it could be something wrong with the external speaker, but I would think that you plug that into other devices and it sounds better on a different radio.
QSL, I use the same speaker for my HF radio, and the other radio's got a front-firing speaker.
Okay, so it sounds like it's the audio circuitry of that particular radio. As I mentioned before, just for the heck of it, since it doesn't cost anyone anything, I would look into the instruction manual and find out how to reset it to factory settings. And if that doesn't do any good, you might want to consider complaining to the manufacturer, see if they can tweak it, because apparently other people think the audio coming out of that model is reasonable.
It could also be a master oscillator, too. That could be another problem.
A master cylinder.
The signal is provided to the mixer and your heterodyne or dual or triple hertz heterodyne circuitry, which is actually the oscillator that is mixing with the frequency, and then you have at the end a signal that is amplified by the amplifier in your radio, and then it goes through the speaker. Now, FM, when you tune a little bit off the main signal, sounds different comparing to the single sideband, where you can easily say where you are up or down by simply observing the higher pitch and the lower pitch of the sound. Now with the FM, you're actually reaching the limit. When you're a little bit off, you're reaching the limit of the modulation quality. You're just catching and delivering to the amplifier at the receiver side that what is on the side of it. And that's what normally is supposed to be cut by the filter. And to actually...
Okay, let me add another little nuance to all this. David, have you ever tried to switch into VFO mode and just adjusted the frequency and listened if the audio quality improved at all when it was off frequency of the transmitter frequency it was supposed to be on?
I set it on VF on the frequency mode, and the frequency is correct.
Okay, but what I'm just suggesting is because Wesley is suggesting that your receiver frequencies might be slightly off of the proper frequency, and that the peak detection is happening slightly off frequency, that can introduce distortion to the FM demodulation. So I was just asking if you tried just, you know, playing with the dial a little bit to see if the audio should get worse as you move away from the transmitting frequency. If the problem was that your receiver frequency settings are a little off, you might not find that. You might find that slightly off frequency gave you a better audio signal than being smack dab on frequency.
QSL, I'll try that. I'll try to see, first of all, if I'm receiving on frequency, and then I would consider, restoring, you know, the factory settings. I hope I don't have to do that. And maybe there's a way to restore the settings or keeping the memory.
It's some radios, you have another FM, a filter at the receiver side, or sort of DSP, digital signal processing for the receiver. If you have it in your radio and you can switch it on, you just narrow the filter from the left and from the right hand side, right side of the signal, and then if the signal is still distorted or even more distorted, then you know that you're off. And thank you.
Again, David, I'm not completely aware of the nuances of your particular radio. Most radios nowadays do have some means to store and offload their settings. There's usually some kind of a programming cable. I know one of the first things I do with pretty much everything I own is get an archive setting of my settings, so that occasionally when I too have to hit the reset button, I have a copy of it someplace that I could use. So, again, I would suggest you take a good look at the instruction manual that came with your 71A and see if there's some kind of ability to offload your settings to a file on a computer.
QSL. Yeah, I'll definitely have a look. But before I do anything, I have to get a cable for this radio. The one that I had, it fell apart. So that's the first thing. Make the investment for the cable. Go ahead.
N2YC.
Yes, N2YC.
Ned, thank you, Ned. Name here is John. Just very quickly, I sort of joined this late. Station with the Kenwood radio. And Leslie, I think, said something about it with the external speaker, but does the main radio, do you have that on narrow FM and not wide FM? That would cause a big problem if you had it on wide FM. Back to Ned.
David, have you been able to check to make sure that you're not on narrow FM?
No, he should be on narrow FM, not wide FM.
Okay, David, have you checked the settings?
I'm on FM. Do I need to be on narrow FM?
QSL.
All right, hold on. I'm going to do it.
KD2TUZ, comment?
Yes, comment.
Is it too late to ask a question or to be put on the list for a question?
No, it's never too late. You want to give me your name and your call sign one more time?
Name is Sean, call sign KD2TUZ, Kilo Delta 2 Tango Uniform Zulu.
Okay, John, you're right up after Howard.
It was Sean, not John, S-E-A-N.
Oh, okay, Sean.
I want to send my thanks to that person who told me about Now FM. It does sound much better.
Well, very glad to have helped. Here is John, call is N2YC. And enjoy the new receiver, I guess. Back to Ned.
Old receiver, thank you very much.
David, problem solved this time, I guess.
QSL, old receiver has new life. Thank you very much, everyone, John and Roy and Wesley.
You're welcome, David. Enjoy your new radio. Next on the list tonight is Howard. I hope I didn't keep you too long. Howard W2HL, you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, thank you, Roy. It hasn't been too long. I have an observable problem, which is alternator wind. It's more apparent on UHF in the mobile here. Well, of course it would be in the mobile. I am unexperienced with this, and I'm wondering how I could get it out the best way. Manufacture one by AutoZone or something, where it would go along the power cable or directly in the alternator. Battery. I'm directly connected to this battery from the white shut off the car. I'm going to put it back on.
WB2E8.
Connected directly to the battery. And I'm using a mag mount. So, I don't know if the mag mount, I don't think, is grounded. Nor the, I don't know if the battery is. So I have to directly connect to the battery. Maybe there's some commercial available, with any sort of remote. Or maybe
Ed recognize. I just want to mention to Howard, perhaps your car battery is kind of low on voltage. When you first transmitted, it sounded fine, but as you continued to talk, it got noisier and noisier. I'm assuming that the power output dropped because the battery voltage level dropped in your car. But Ed wanted to comment on your question. So please, Ed.
I once had a fascinating experience. My Reef suddenly developed a severe alternator whine, was driving me crazy, and then the alternator failed. If you're going crazy, before you pull your hair out, bring the car into your mechanic and have him run a tester on your alternator to see if you may have a bad diode.
Yeah, that could be, but that could also be expensive. The battery is being charged all the time. So I don't have any problem with the alternator as far as charging is concerned. So I hate to put a new alternator. I don't know how these guys can check it. But I know that that could be a problem. But the alternator is working. On the receive is 14.1, and when I transmit, the voltage is about 12.3 volts. I don't know if that's normal.
Yeah, but you know how much ripple is on that?
No.
Aha.
Good, Roy. WB2EAV going back to sleep.
Okay, Ed. Thanks for your input. That's a good recommendation. I'm sure you have done, as I mentioned earlier tonight, the same way that if you ask any friend about problems with a computer, they'll ask you if you tried turning it off and turning it on. So in that fine history, have you tried putting ferrite clamps at different wire inputs of your radio and see if you might dampen a little bit of this whine?
You mean on the power line?
Yes.
Yeah, I tried that. That's
yeah, I don't know what happened to your signal. Right now you're about 80% noise.
Question?
Yeah. Is this any better?
Much better.
I did try the ferrites, a couple of ferrite coils and clamped them onto the power line, but that didn't make any difference.
Oh, well, sometimes that works. Someone had a question or a comment or something?
In regards to the topic, could you put the light beads and chokes onto the cabling and wiring within the ignition whine and noise? I just thought of that about the topic. I mean, obviously, you know, we can put it on coaxial cables and stuff like that, but can it be put on the wiring within a vehicle? I'm just curious.
I see no reason why you can't. I mean, you're more familiar with putting the ferrite on things like coaxial cables, but people regularly put them on USB connectors and microphone input connectors, and just about any piece of wire that goes into your radio, you can place a ferrite clamp to limit the common mode that gets picked up by the wire and gets fed into a amplification circuit in your radio that doesn't want RF to be sent into it. So it's perfectly reasonable to put a clamp on just about any insulated electrical transmission wire type of line.
John, thank you.
Comment?
Yes, please, comment.
Yeah, KC2SHO here, John. One thing I haven't heard anybody ask the gentleman is how long is your ground wire? Typically in automobiles, I don't know, some people really like to run it all the way to the battery. They feel they get I don't know whether they feel they're going to get a better conductor that way, but with my experience installing in automobiles, you want to make sure you have the shortest ground wire possible. That common mode noise can just be picked up over that wire. There's no need to run it all the way to the battery. So curious what he has. I didn't catch the call sign or any of that. This is KC2, SHO, back to net.
Thank you, John. Yeah, we're talking to Howard W2HL. So John asked, what kind of a ground connection do you have? Is it a long wire to the actual battery, or is it grounded in the chassis?
Yeah, Roger Roy. Incidentally, when I transmit, and thank you for your station, and when I transmit, the voltage goes down to 12.7. I'm thinking that what Ed mentioned before about the diode could be a bad diode in the alternator. You know, to change an alternator, just you know, everything's working in the car fine. But I guess that could be. I think I recall having a bad diode in an alternator once. I think that cleared up the many, many years ago. I can't even remember exactly. I am connected directly to the battery with the negative and the positive going directly to the power cord of the radio. It's two wires about the battery is in the trunk by the spare tire. I'd say it's about 6 feet of positive and negative wire going directly to the radio.
WB2EAB again.
Yes, sir.
What gauge wire, and have you checked the quality of connections?
I haven't really checked the quality of the connections. That's a good idea. The gauge wire, I would say, is probably 12 gauge.
12.7 volts on transmit means either you have a very high resistance in your power leads or your electrical system is running on fumes, and I revert back to have that alternator checked out, because after this was acting up for a while, mine died. I mean, the car was useless. I'm suspecting you're where I was.
Yeah, you think that the voltage drop is too low when I transmit?
Well, what would cause the voltage drop?
I think the alternator is on last legs. It's running on fumes. It's possible you just have a high resistance power line, in which case you might want to just go to a higher gauge cable. I guess the answer is, can you have a friend with a voltmeter check the battery terminals where you transmit? And if you see any change at all at the battery terminals while you're transmitting, I'd be very worried about the car. Otherwise, you might want to just go to static cable.
Yeah, that's an idea, and we could check that at the battery. That's a good idea. And wider cables, that's a good idea. But what about the possibility of putting a choke in series with the positive coming off the alternator? Does anybody have any experience with that? Are they available commercially? Over.
Remember, this is a low-frequency effect. Those chokes are really meant for RF, not audio frequencies.
Well, a lot of these chokes that they sell are for audio in cars, I would imagine, to eliminate audio from stereos, alternator one.
My experience is they keep RF and other stuff out of it.
Okay.
So, Howard, I hope you got a lot of good suggestions. I hope you you act on them and are able to come back and tell us how it all turned out.
Yeah, thank you, Roy and Ed and the other stations. Yeah, we'll try to see what we can do. And we'll report back to you and the TechNet. Back to you, Roy. Thank you. And everybody, be safe out there. W2HL.
You're welcome, Howard. And just before you leave, what did you do to change the signal so that the noise went away?
I moved forward about 3 feet.
Okay, very good. It's amazing how RF kind of screws around with things, but that's good to know. Okay, thank you very much, Howard.
Yeah, you're welcome. And Nina says thank you and hello. Okay, back to you, Roy.
Well, Nina, you're welcome, and hello as well. Next on the list tonight is Sean. What's your question tonight, Sean?
My question is, I just recently validated my Echolink account, and this, obviously this isn't related to a bunch of stuff that you guys were talking about. It's about Echolink. I just signed up for the account, and I was wondering that when I tried to put in this specific repeater, that it wouldn't come up. Does anyone know anything about that?
That's curious, because I'm on Echolink right now. There's three other people there with me. Was there any kind of... Did you do it through a cell phone? Did you do it through a PC? What hardware did you use?
Yes, I was doing it through my iPhone, so I don't know if that had anything to do with it.
Okay, usually the iPhone application is a lot more forgiving than the PC computer version. You just have to kind of type in the station W2VL, and you got nothing when you type that in?
You know what, that's exactly why. I was typing in the wrong station. I was typing in W2KBQ.
Okay, yeah, that's the other repeater. I've never really successfully used it. There's two KPQs. There's the R, which is offline. There's the L, which registers online. But I would advise you to try and connect to the W2VL-R EchoLink server.
Yeah, I'm going to try connecting to that right now. Thank you.
Question?
Yes, what's your question?
To RMD5D. When was that station line, the station that just came on? First time I've heard a suffix beginning with a T. I'm just wondering.
There's actually been a lot of KD2Ts in the last, 6 months. That's what they're up to right now. For some odd reason, also, you're dropping out of the repeater about 10, 15, 20% of the time. But KD2Ts are not that uncommon. They're very common among people who've gotten their licenses in the last few months.
Very good. I just increased power. So I didn't know anything. All right, KD2RMD.
Okay, Russell. Well, Sean, I can see on my EchoLink that you register as logging on. So I guess that problem is solved for tonight.
I just tried to transmit on EchoLink from my iPhone. So I'm going to try transmitting from my iPhone on the EchoLink, KD2TUZ.
Okay, Sean, fire away.
KD2TUZ on EchoLink radio set.
Okay, we hear you reasonably fine, Sean. So you're now on EchoLink.
Okay, thank you guys. I'll be clear for now. KD2CUZ.
Okay, Sean, I'm glad we could help you. Please come back if you have any other questions or problems or to participate. Anyone with any other technical questions they have tonight?
Whiskey 2 Bravo Zulu.
Hello again, Rich.
I don't know if you could hear me. I don't know what happened. Have no idea what happened. But I'm back. It could be another overheating problem that corrected itself with the KC1SAM fan fix. Or whatever. But just as long as you can hear me, thanks for all your help, Roy, and all the other guys. W2BC clear.
Okay, very good, Rich. I'm glad that you were able to get back on the repeater, and I hope you have less problems with overheating. I wish you good luck on your new radio that you should be getting any second now.
Well, one said that I ordered exactly 2 months ago yesterday, that it was delivered yesterday. I went to the my mailbox today, and sure enough, there was a key to open one of those bigger boxes. And I hurriedly went home and slid open the top, and it was somebody else. And mine is nowhere in sight, and I'm going to be returning it anyway since... As you know, I just fun and games with the pandemic, which, by the way, you're going to talk a little bit about anyway tonight. Anyway, once again, thanks for a great net, W2BC.
You're welcome, Rich. Thank you. And, yeah, the great viral pandemic of 2020. Gonna be in the history books. Yeah, I will broach the subject with the audience and kind of figure out whether they want to talk about it or not. That's up next.
N1 PLP.
Yes, PLP.
Yeah, I had trouble reaching you guys earlier today. So, I've got a question for you on some transmission. Power from my station.
Yeah, sure. What's the question?
Well, I just hooked up a new, to me, Kenwood